Charles Davis, who, of course, you all know is a national broadcaster now, will be joining CBS this year. Also see him on the NFL Network. But he was part of one of those special teams at Tennessee, the 1985 Sugar Bowl champion Tennessee Volunteers. And he joins us on the phone tonight from his home down in Florida. Charles, I know that you were close to Coach Majors. This had to be a tough day for you.
Yeah, no doubt about it, Bob. And I think for all of us who are DFLs, and even if you didn't play for Coach Majors, you knew who he was. You know, his presence helps dominate the landscape there. And, you know, he's part of our Mount Rushmore of Tennessee Vols. And obviously we're going to miss him dearly. And I was fortunate enough to not just play for him, but as you said, had a chance to grow closer to him as after my playing career was over and all the way up to the sad news from last night.
You thought you were going to be a quarterback, right, when you came to Tennessee? What was the conversation to get you to defensive back? And a good one.
It wasn't much of one, truthfully, Bob. I mean, I came in, if recollection is close, there were eight of us in my class that had quarterback experience. Two, I think one was a junior college transfer, Sam Aiello, and then there was a bunch of us who came in as freshmen. And when it was all said and done, I think Sam transferred out, Tim Norton transferred out, Tommy Sims, Terry Brown, myself, all became defensive backs. My roommate Tyrone Robinson became an outside linebacker. Joey Klingscales became a wide receiver. So, yeah, that was part of the thing. If you were a quarterback, you were also known as an athlete. And the conversation was simply this, Bob. I was a freshman. Back then, you brought in the freshmen for the first 3 days by themselves so they could get oriented before the varsity came in. And after day two morning practice, Coach George Catavola said, "Hey, why don't you come by my office and see me after lunch?" So I went by and saw him after lunch. He told me he thought I could be a defensive back. And I said, "Okay, great. But I still want to give it a shot at quarterback." He said, "No problem." He said, you think about it and we'll talk about it later." When I went down to get ready for the afternoon practice, my number had changed, my face mask had changed, my shoulder pads had changed, and I said, "You know something? I think I'm a defensive back." And that's pretty much the end of it.
Talk about a Coach Majors practice. They were intense. He was hard on everybody because he pushed you so hard. And it was discipline. It was doing it the right way. And we're going to do it over and over again till you do it right. And he was hard on his players and his coaching staff, but it paid such big dividends. And I'm sure it's still for you, still paying dividends, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, and I can feel those practices come out in me when I'm talking with my kids or someone who asks to be, you know, mentored as I ask people to mentor me, you know, that sort of thing. You know, when you kind of take them to that level, you tend to find out if somebody wants to do something or not. I think that's what Coach wanted to find out. He wanted to find out if you were going to break now as opposed to breaking against Alabama or Auburn or Florida or Georgia or whoever we were playing. So that was part of it, but he pushed himself the same way. He as you said, he was hard on the coaches, so the coaches were hard on us. And as I got out of Tennessee and got into my working world where I was still around athletics, Bob, you know what I heard from NFL people? "We like Tennessee kids. They understand how to practice. They understand what it takes in between Sundays in order to get ready." And a lot of that is a credit to him and the great staff that I was lucky enough to play for, and a number of other people were able to do the same.
I'm taking this number from Chris Lowe of ESPN.com, but he says there are 33 or 34 former Johnny Majors assistants who became head coaches either in college or in the NFL. He was hard on his coaches, paid them well, and developed them, taught them how to be coaches. You've run across a lot of these guys in your work in college football, now in the NFL. They're still dotted all over the landscape, aren't they?
They really are, and I run into them, as you mentioned, in the NFL, and, you know, obviously when I was doing a lot more college football, and to see their disciples as well. And it's funny to hear coaches who didn't coach for Coach Majors but are coaching under people who did, to hear them talk and feel like they actually knew Coach, or they understood a little bit more. And, you know, Coach was real big on getting around the country and seeing people and doing different things. You know, we used to tease him, we called him America's Guest. But he got around a lot of those places. A lot of those former coaches would bring him back. And then after he left, their staff would have a much greater appreciation for what the head coach was talking about, what he brought with him from Tennessee or Iowa State or Pitt or wherever it was that allowed them to now go on and have their opportunity to be a head coach. But I got that a lot from different places. Oh, you play for Coach Majors. Heard a lot about him. And then I met him. And you know, you can kind of see the lights go on from that point on. But, yeah, that's a big-time number and a big tree that Coach had. And, you know, he may have been, what, 5'10 or whatever the measurement was. But, boy, he was really kind of an oak in a lot of ways that way. And a number of those coaches, I will guarantee you, just like we as players, when we were being disciplined, when he was pushing us, when he was doing a lot of those things, I will guarantee you they did what we did. They would go back to their offices, like we would go back to our dorm rooms and go, man, if I ever become a coach or if I ever do this, I'll never do it like that. I won't do that to people. I won't say that. I won't do it. And then we find ourselves doing a lot of those similar things because in a lot of ways they did work. And as you get older, you understand it better.
You know, you mentioned the coaching tree. It's impressive when you look at Jimmy Johnson, Jackie Sherrill, Dave Wannstedt, David Cutcliffe, Philip Fulmer, Lovie Smith. I mean, just go down the list. It's just incredible some of the names that have been associated with Coach Majors that he taught them how to be a head coach.
Yeah, and you know, and some of them he was assistants with. You know, when you think about Coach Dickey, you know, at Arkansas, you know, and coaching guys who later on became coaches themselves. You know, I mean, the tree is, you know, unbelievable. Like Ken Hatfield was the All-American safety at Arkansas, who later went on and became a very successful head coach at a number of different places. And Coach Majors coached him. And, we could go on for days about that. But the lessons, the finding out if you really wanted to do something and sticking with it, which was a big part of what we did in practice. And look, Bob, I don't want to overstate it. I don't want to make it sound like we did something no one else in the world did, because you know how it gets. I'm 55. So our tales and our yarns, as you know, they grow, right?
Yeah.
You know, the game where the guy scored 2 touchdowns, at our age now, he scored 5. Okay? So that's kind of how it works. But I think I can take the hyperbole out of it. I can take being overly dramatic out of it. And as you said, those numbers don't lie about people who became head coaches. And a lot of them became successful head coaches. It wasn't just that they got a job and they flamed out. That happens to anyone. But you're talking about guys who went on and won Super Bowls and national championships, not to mention a number of us who played for them and became successful high school coaches. You know, so it works its way through. And the Johnny Majors way, the Tennessee way, everyone put their own spin on it. But there's a lot of good basics in there, and he garnered a lot of respect out there. And, you know, every time I see Coach Barry Switzer, I'm lucky enough to still see Coach from time to time. And every time I see him, you know what he does, Bob? Gives me a big old, Charlie, you got me another one. Because that night we beat Miami.
Yeah.
They jumped on Penn State in the Orange Bowl. And if we lost to Miami was going to win the national title. Because they had beaten Barry Switzer in Oklahoma that year in Norman. That was Troy Aikman's last game, broke his ankle. They went back to the wishbone when Jamel Holloway ran off their streak and then beat Penn State. But if we don't beat Miami, he doesn't get another national title. So he said, you guys, you volunteers, always good with me, old Johnny boy.
Charles, on that 85 team, the Sugar Vols, is still in the fans' minds, one of the most favorite teams in the history of Tennessee football. It was such a remarkable season, finally win an SEC championship, get to the Sugar Bowl. You lose your quarterback in midseason. Darryl Dickey comes in. They got to change a lot of the offense. And the coaching job that staff did in 85 to get you there and to beat that, win that game against Miami was really remarkable, wasn't it?
It really was. And it's all through on both sides of the ball. You know, it's Walt Harris coordinating the offense, Ken Donahue, God rest his soul, coordinating the defense. Dick Bumpus is a linebacker's coach, you know, and I'm playing, you know, Ron Zook had the secondary at that time. Then on the offensive side, Coach Doug Matthews, one of my favorite people in the entire world, because I played special teams for Coach. But he coached the running back, and even the most hardcore Tennessee fan, I'm like, okay, name all the running backs we played that year.
Yeah.
Right? Because Coach had to run through so many different injuries and lineup changes and different things we were doing and getting guys ready, getting guys like Jeff Powell ready who produced in the Sugar Bowl for us. But it wasn't just that one time. It was throughout the entire season. And I'm not trying to get short shrift to any coach. I don't want to miss any. Kippy Brown, coaching receivers, always extraordinary in what they did. You know, we just go right on down the line. You know, it was really a special staff. You know, Coach Cut. Oh, I mean, my goodness. It was just unbelievable. And it wasn't Daryl. I mean, losing Tony Robinson in Birmingham against Bama, Daryl Dickey comes in and carries us home. You know, the Sugar Bowl, two of my favorite compatriots ever, Tommy Sims and Terry Brown, our starting corners, they get hurt leading up to the Sugar Bowl. They don't play. Now, we didn't know at the time that Terry McDaniel was going to be an all-pro corner back in the NFL. He's now got to start. Victor Peppers has to start against Miami. Andre Kramer has to take on a bigger role. Chris White had an All-American season in his only year as a starter at Tennessee. I was lucky enough to be out there with them. Think about that now, going against Miami, who later on, and remember who their receivers were, even though they were young. Michael Irvin, Brian Blades, both first-round picks in the NFL. Brett Perryman was their third receiver, and I think he was a third-round pick who played double-digit seasons in the NFL. That's what they had to get ready for with guys who hadn't played that much, and somehow we found a way to not just beat Miami, but dominate them. And that tells me about our staff getting guys ready to go.
And they had a pretty good quarterback by the name of Testaverde.
Yeah, some guy named Testaverde who won a Heisman the next year. I mean, when you look at that lineup, Bob, that was a ridiculously good lineup. And we have a lot to be proud of. And that was the night that we brought Tennessee football back after a little bit of an absence.
I think you're right. That really set the stage to get the program headed into the 90s and the great decade of the 90s. Charles, I know it's a tough day for all of us that know and love Coach Majors, and I know he bragged about you all the time. He was so proud of what you've done and what you've accomplished on the field and off. And for all of us, it's just a tough day, isn't it?
It really is, and thank you, Bob, for those kind words. And look, all of us who played for him, as we always say, not everyone loved playing for him. There's no coach that's ever been like that, but the vast majority of us did. We respected him. I will happily say that I love Coach Majors. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. A profound influence on my life. And from the day I reported to Knoxville in 1982 for freshman orientation to our time right now, Bob, I will guarantee you there's not been a single day that I haven't thought about Coach Majors or something he taught me or a fun story or when he ripped me for being a bad player. But he's had that type of an influence on my life. And I will bet you when they close the lid on my coffin, there will not be another day from now until then that I don't think about Coach Majors and what he's given me. I'm a very fortunate man to have played for him and consider myself lucky to be a Tennessee Volunteer.
Charles, thanks for your time, your reflections. Congratulations on your move to CBS as one of the top analysts there. Well-deserved in that. We look forward to seeing you here on campus soon, and keep your family healthy and safe, and we just look forward to seeing you. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, you do the same. Everyone in Big Orange Country, the exact same thing. And please make sure my condolences get to Mrs. Majors and John and Mary and the rest of the Majors family. Gonna miss the old coach, and I'm gonna shed a few more tears tonight and for a few days. But I'll also have a big smile on my face, knowing that I'm always gonna be one of Johnny Majors' guys.
Yeah, me sure are. Thanks, Charles. Talk to you soon.